I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Eden Robinson joins me now. She has just published her latest book, Son of a Trickster. It's a novel that's getting good notices. I just started it, and it's captivating. It's funny, and it's heartfelt, and it's just an enjoyable experience. I'll get Ms. Robinson to tell us about her book and the characters therein, chiefly Jared of high school age and the people around him. We'll also talk about the setting and about her process in writing, how she wrote this book, and what was going on around her. Eden Robinson is Heisla and Heitzuk. She is the author of previous books, Traplines, Monkey Beach, and Blood Sports. She received the Ethel Wilson Fiction Prize and was a finalist for the Giller Prize and the Governor General's Award for Fiction. She lives in Kitimat. She will be in Vancouver as part of Insight, presented by the Vancouver Writers' Fest next Wednesday, the 22nd of February, at the Public Library's Central Branch downtown. Visit writersfest.bc.ca for more information. The book is published by Knopf. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Eden Robinson. Ms. Robinson, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So the character in the book, I guess the one that the story revolves around is Jared. And so I guess he's a great place to start in terms of who he is and what's going around him when we meet him in Son of a Trickster.
Yeah.
So he's in high school.
Yes, he's 16. He had his parents moved to Kitimat from Bella Bella when he was quite young. His dad got work at the Uracan Pulp and Paper Mill.
Mm-hmm.
He got injured just before Uracan shut down. So after that, his parents got divorced. They were both struggling with their own issues. And Jared is a very practical soul, and his big goal is to keep his family together and to keep it safe.
Yeah.
So he's kind of branched out, and he has formed relationships with other people. And when I first started writing the book, it was meant to be more of a commentary on you know, how people survive when mm-hmm. the company closes down. And then in this instance, the trickster kind of hijacked things.
Yeah. So you'll tell us about this idea of the trickster and how important that is to the story. And I guess stories in general, because, I mean, they employ that device, don't they?
Yes.
And so how does the trickster manifest itself in Jared's life?
Well, I'm half Heisla and half Heltzik, and I chose even though my character is half Heltzik, spoiler alert, he's also half Trickster.
Mm.
The Trickster in question is Wicket. He is a transforming raven, and he comes into Jared's mother's life, and they hook up at the All Native. And the story is about their son, Jared. In traditional culture, Wicket had many roles. The one I was specifically interested in for the book was his role as a kind of an instigator.
Mm-hmm.
He taught kids and, you know, other people about the rules and the protocols of Heisla culture by breaking all the rules and protocols of Heisla culture. So his stories were always raucous and earthy and really, really funny. So that's what I was trying to channel for Son of a Trickster.
And do you find as you're writing a book like this that your role as the storyteller, not only for everyone that reads your book, sort of provides the insight that they need to have about this tradition of storytelling, say?
I didn't want to explain it too much in a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it comes through, but for people on the West Coast who have trickster characters like the one I'm writing about, they'll read a little more into it.
Yeah.
But for general readers, he functions as a in the way that know, our culture has for tricksters. He's there are a lot of different tricksters out there, and some of the First Nations have a more benign trickster, mm-hmm. but our trickster was a little crazy. He's a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah, I'll bet. In terms of writing a book like this, like writing a novel like Son of a Trickster, and your previous books as well, considering that process, do you find that as you're writing a book like this, that there's something about family or identity that you learn that you didn't know before, say?
Oh, yes, especially in this one. The main character's mother is a very angry person. She had a very hard childhood. She's had a very hard life. And the thing that I was not expecting at all was for her to make more than two appearances. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to show up, you know, throw a fit, and then disappear. But as the drafts went by, her relationship with Jared, while still dysfunctional, had these incredible moments of tenderness, which spoke to the things in her heart that were still alive and manifested in her son, and his ability to look past the shitty things that the people in his life do and see them for the emotional connection he has with them. That I was not expecting in the book. Their relationship was, it also made it harder when she would, you know, when other characters would do things that weren't terribly kind. Mm-hmm. It made it harder for me as the writer, because you know I could understand why they were doing it better. Yeah. So it taught me just how complicated some of these relationships can get without fracturing.
And so, what does that speak to where you are in your life, say, in terms of these are things that you may not necessarily experience, but you're thinking about, that you're at the right age, say, to understand what family's all about, say?
Now that I'm older, much, much older. A lot of the experiences I had, I understand the dynamics of them better. Yeah. I understand where, you know, what my part in them going wrong was, rather than just, you know, I was done wrong.
Yeah.
So it's given me, I think the viewpoint of age has definitely changed my perception of my characters and, you know, my own family.
Yeah. Well, you're not old. I mean, you got that award recently, mid-career, so I guess that, right?
Let's see. Well, I'm 49, so I think next year will be... I don't get any of the good discounts next year, though.
No, yeah.
No.
You got to wait 5 years. Yeah,
I got to wait another 5 years before I, you know, show up on senior day. I'm looking forward to it, though. I was like, well, next year I can get my shingles vaccine.
Ah, there you go.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
This year I got my tetanus diphtheria shot.
See, I'm 30. I turned 35 shortly, and so I'm thinking, well, this is what I've got to look forward to, right?
Well, did you get a tetanus diphtheria shot when you were in grade 9?
Probably, yeah, when I was at, like, elementary school, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's quite painful, but it's free.
Yeah. And these are the things you think about as you get older, isn't it? You know,
it really is, yeah. Prunes are your friends.
Fiber, yeah.
Roughage.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, when you think about it, I mean, 50 in your parents' day is a lot different than it is now, right?
Yes. By 50, they had already had all their kids. You know, Their oldest was in high school. They had a house. They had cars, you know.
Yeah.
They had roles in the community. So 50 is very different for me.
Yeah. Even my generation, when and I think of the 50-year-olds that I know now as opposed to, say, the 50-year-olds I knew when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's a lot, you know. I don't know if our society's getting younger, I guess, in its mindset.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. There's still, you know, there's still a the expectations of what you do at 50 have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing is, I'm starting your book, and I'm getting a good sense of is this place where it's set.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in Vancouver my whole life, but I don't travel the province as much. So when people read "Son of a Trickster," they get a good sense, obviously, of Kitimat. Was that your goal, say, in wanting to tell the reader about this place that you know?
Yeah, I like books that are set in small towns, and I like books. I lived in Vancouver, and the sequel to Son of a Trickster is set in Vancouver.
Mm.
I don't know how much of a spoiler this is, but, you know, he does survive the events of Son of a Trickster.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that makes sense, and for a second and third book, right? Yeah.
Spoiler! So, you know, a year later, you know, he's going to Vancouver to do some upgrading to get into a program for medical sonography at BCIT.
Mm.
But he doesn't have any funding, so he couch surfs. And one of the people he couch surfs with is his aunt, who's a writer and an activist and a little bit of an eccentric, not based on anyone.
So it is this place, Kitimat. Is it a place that people grow up in and think, one day I have to go out? Like, I have to leave, say?
Yeah, we just finished our boom, like the LNG boom, just petered out. So it's a very quiet place right now. And I think when you've grown up in a small town, your greatest desire is to go somewhere exciting. And when I moved back to Kitimat when I was, in 2003, all the things that frustrated me when I was 18 were very comforting in my mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
When I'm doing writing workshops, especially when I'm doing them in northern BC, I find that a lot of the stories aren't set in, you know, in Smithers or Morristown. They're set in Vancouver or Toronto or New York, and it's like, no, your place is valid. Your place is real. Your place deserves to be fictionalized.
It's one of the things, I guess, in reading books like yours is because, as I said, I don't get around much. It's my way of understanding the rest of the province. I mean, you take the context of just current events, say politics, and what's happening in popular culture even. You need to understand the rest of this place.
Yes. Yes. And it's, you know, and they're different, and they have different ideas, and they're complicated in their own way. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to be launching in Terrace on February 27th. And the scary one is the one in March, on March 18th in Kitimat, at the library. I'm going to be spending an afternoon doing a sort of, you know, free flow. People come in and out. And so my family's, you know, not very shy with their opinions. So that's, you know, Toronto, fine. You know, Vancouver, fine. Kitimat, hey.
Yeah.
It's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I guess it's that hometown thing, coming home.
It really is.
Yeah.
So we will soon, because when I left, the book hadn't come out yet, and they'll have had a chance to read it by then. So.
Yeah. And so do you find that the folks at home, not only your family, but the people that you know in Kitimat, mm-hmm, or that know of you at least, they are loyal readers, are they?
Yes. Well, for Monkey Beach, Blood Sports was the novel that came out in 2005, and halfway through writing that, I really had quit smoking, and it was a 2, 3, sometimes 4 packs a day.
Really?
So when I quit, there was a little bit of withdrawal. The more I suffered, the more my character suffered. you can see the shift, because Blood Sports wasn't meant to be literally like blood sports. It was supposed to be a metaphor for, you know, the way family, you know, can go wrong and trying to, you know, heal yourself from traumatic events. And you do that through the healing power of love. And then I quit smoking. And you can see the shift in the book itself around page 100, where there's a 40-page torture scene. None of my family has ever made it through. They hit that point and, you know, they phone me up and go, "What the hell, Eden? Seriously. What the hell?"
And then I read about this book, and you had gone through some I guess physical change as well, hadn't you? You cut gluten out of your diet.
Yeah. I quit smoking June 1st, 2004. Mm-hmm. I quit gluten a year later in 2005. And it was transformative because throughout the, you know, I'd been living in Vancouver for about 10 years, and I knew every single public washroom between my apartment and work. Hmm. And I won't get into graphic detail.
Yeah.
I could.
Well, yeah, why not?
Well, you know, it's one of those inflammatory bowel disorders,
right,
that, you know, it's just unpleasant.
Yeah.
I thought I had IBS, but I did the elimination diet and
taking things out and
you take all the allergens in out and then you put them back in one at a time to see what triggers you.
Yeah.
And the 2 weeks that I wasn't having gluten, I was amazing.
Mm.
The changes were almost instant. So I left it out of my diet, and that was a mistake. If you think you're celiac, don't quit gluten until you've done your small bowel biopsy.
Mm.
Otherwise, you have to do the gluten challenge. You have to go back on gluten for 6 months and then do a small bowel biopsy.
Yeah.
So if you think you're celiac, don't quit gluten. Just, you know, go to your doctor and schedule a small bowel biopsy.
Yeah.
Helpful advice from Eden Robinson.
So are there pages in this book that you look back on and you can see where you were and how you felt, say?
Well, this book was different because I wrote it mostly between 4 and 5 in the morning.
Hmm.
All the other books I wrote at night, between 10 and 2. But I started adjuncting around 2010. I'm usually online creative writing courses.
Mm-hmm.
So I was prepared for, the workshops. I wasn't prepared for the marking. I didn't realize how much marking would be involved. So I didn't have a lot of time to write. So I would write for about an hour between 4 and 5. I'd set my coffee. When the pot was finished, I'd have a couple of cups and then just dive right into writing. Then I'd have breakfast, and then I'd start marking. So you would think that would be, you know. But this book, I also, I was going through, the beginnings of menopause.
Mm.
And I didn't realize how great my memory was until I lost it.
Mm.
So I don't mind the hot flashes, that's fine. I don't mind the night sweats, that's fine. But the beautiful memory that I had is, you know, toast. So I had to change a lot of my strategies because if you look at Monkey Beach, which was written when, you know, before the gluten got out of hand, way before menopause, you'll see that the chunks of the book are like hundreds of pages long. You know, they wind in time, they wind in space, they're complicated, they spiral, they circle, they zigzag. Whereas this book, Son of a Trickster, like the longest chapter is 14 pages. And I titled them not so much for the reader, but so I could remember what happened, what happened in that chapter. And I had like a sort of vision board thing.
Right.
Where I would note down, like, which characters were where. And it was like, you know, it was simply because right now I have, like a very fuzzy brain.
Mm.
So I have to rely on techniques that I developed to help me remember what I had written. So it was a very different process from the other books. So the next one will be, you know, the same kind of structure, short chapters, titled, lots of note cards, lots of, you know, sticking things to the wall.
I skipped to the back, to the acknowledgements, and I noticed that you mentioned your agent's astrological sign. So Denise is a Capricorn, right?
Yeah, she's solidly a Capricorn.
Yeah. So this book deals with the spiritual, the trickster, I'm assuming, because you mentioned that your agent is a Capricorn, that you buy into astrology. Do you think that the spiritual astrology that doesn't get the respect that it deserves?
Well, I find that astrology doesn't get a lot of respect. I'm a Capricornian. I was born like 4 hours before Aquarius.
Mm.
Whenever I, you know, say something astrological, my agent goes, "Oh, please stop talking about astrology. Please, you're supposed to be a serious literary author." Typical Capricorn. January 13th, yeah.
So when you encounter people, you can tell, say, traits and the sort from whatever sign they are?
I mean, oh, I just guess.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, but I know her birthday. January 13th, Capricorns are, very much like that.
Yeah. So, like, I'm a Pisces. Does that mean anything?
Oh, that's cool. Oh, very creative.
See, I don't feel creative.
You don't feel creative?
Not really.
No?
No.
No. Well, Pisces is an interesting sign. Some of my cousins are Pisces, and they say it's the greatest sign.
Well, I'd buy into that, sure. I'll take that, We're very sensitive, I'm told.
Yeah, it depends on your rising sign. I drove my parents absolutely nuts.
Yeah, see, this is more complicated than I thought. Because I mean, I just thought it's whatever's in the paper every day, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, that's your sun sign. That's your main sign. Like, where was the moon? What time were you born? You know, how far away were you from? You know. Yeah, it's. I was a very obsessive child, and my dad was a public works foreman.
Mm.
So I remember, you know, stopping in his office and doing astrological charts for, you know, all his workers. And he just had this sort of sheepish look on his face. Like, yep, that's my daughter. It was poor crew. Yeah, then I went into palmistry.
Mm.
I was really into that. I found tarot cards a little freaky, though.
Yeah, they look weird, too, I must say.
Yeah, your deck starts to talk to you.
Really?
It's really cool. Yeah. It's cool and freaky, so I don't do tarot anymore. But And the palmistry, the only things I learned about it were the things that were flattering. So I didn't want to learn about the things that weren't. So I have an edited palmistry.
Yeah. Well, see, what I'm looking for now at this point in my life is you know, I'm just looking for answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can find answers there or in a fortune cookie or in the newspaper or whatever.
Yeah.
Religion, even. You know, I'm down to listening to it, but, you know, whether I buy into it or not is another thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, most of the answers I found were by doing things that really scared me.
Is that the reason why there's, say, a lot of violence in this book?
No. I grew up with a lot of horror. I loved
really?
Horror.
Yeah.
I loved, my mom is a huge, like, she likes true crime.
Mm.
We used to have a lot of true detective and true romance in the house.
Yeah.
So I get my, you know, gruesome sensibility from her. Dad was more into Popular Mechanics, Scientific America. He liked to figure out how things worked. Like when he was a kid, his sisters all got one doll because it was so expensive because mm-hmm. its eyes opened and closed. And then one day the doll disappeared. And they found it in the spring, you know, the melting snow bank. And Dad had drilled a hole in the back of its head to see, so that he could figure out
see how the eyes work.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't piss off all your older sisters. Because they knew immediately who did it.
Right.
There's only one person who would do that. Oh, my God.
I'm in tears. This has been so fun for me. I can't tell you. But back to, because I've got one more question here. When you, because this is going to be the first of three books.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, when you started this, did you foresee the three book? No?
Oh, no, yeah. Of course not. No, I was, I actually, the initial concept was to bring the trickster into the present. And and then, you know, the story kept expanding and expanding and expanding, and then things would happen, like there was a writer named Richard Van Camp, and we went to a storytelling festival,
mm-hmm.
and he told the story of, you know, the Otter Sisters in the All-Native Basketball Tournament in Prince Rupert. And it was funny, and it tickled me. I just laughed. And but, you know, our otter stories were very different. You know, the otters were not benign in any way, shape, or form. But once I put them in Son of... Spoiler alert!
Yeah.
Once I put them in Son of a Trickster,
uh-huh.
The story took a very different turn. And there was still violence and horror and, you know, but otters were kind of, you know, they were angry characters, and they would do things like they're transform into children, and you would go outside,
uh-huh.
you know, and you'd play with them, and you'd be so busy playing you wouldn't realize that, you know, you were somewhere in the woods, and then they would all disappear.
Mm.
And, you know, if you couldn't find your way back, you died. So those were the kind of, and they were creepy stories, and so those are the otters I put in my book, the otters I grew up with. Because, you know, I loved horror when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So the more I wrote, the longer it got. The more stories started pouring into it, and by 2015, I realized that it was probably going to be two books because I had hit 450 pages, and we still hadn't gotten to the main antagonist.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, well, and then once my editor suggested that, you know, because there was so many elements, because there were so many subplots and characters, and there were so many different things going on that maybe it would be best to simplify the structure and have a more linear structure. So once I did that, it became very clear that the Kitimat section was its own book.
Yeah.
And then once I split that off, the Vancouver section, it became very clear that that was probably going to be more than a book. So, so I split that one too. That's how it became a trilogy. It was quite a surprise to me. I've never written one before, so.
And it must be great too, because the notices for this book are terrific, and a lot of them have mentioned how much they're anticipating the next two books.
Oh, yay! I haven't been reading them because, I just don't.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty good.
I'll
tell
good!
You that
yay!
Much.
Yeah. No, I've well, you know, I'm glad it's getting notices. Like even like with Bloodsport, there weren't a lot.
Yeah.
So. I think it's harder to get no notices than to get, like, bad notices.
Yeah.
Because then at least, you know, someone has read your book.
Yeah. And I noticed a couple of them, how thoughtfully they read the book.
Aww.
That they actually spent the time to, you know, and they know your work, obviously, which is, I think, good for any author.
Aww.
Well, I hope I don't spoil that part of it. I mean, will you read them later, say?
I'll read them later. I just packed them into a file, and probably I've done a first draft of the second book.
Yeah.
When all the touring and traveling's over, I settle down in April, and then I'm going to do a restructure. And then through May, June, July, and August, I'm planning on just doing a full rewrite of this draft and then hopefully handing it in sometime in the winter.
Yeah. There's a podcast that I listen to, and I've seen on Twitter as well people saying just how much they enjoy this book and are looking forward to the other one.
Fantastic.
I think it's just a great reception to this book, isn't it?
Oh, I've been avoiding.
Yeah.
Well, it helps that I'm. It helps that I'm traveling. It's been, the most I've spent in one place has been like 2 days. So.
Yeah.
And I'm in. I'm obsessively detailed about traveling. So, I get to the airport like way too soon.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm the same. Yeah. You can't. Leave it to chance or whatever, right? But Eden, this has been such a delight to talk to you. People warn me saying that you're going to enjoy talking to her. And you know, when people tell you that, you know, because I've done this a while now, you know, you're sure, right? But I mean, I've been in tears laughing. So this has been great. This has been terrific. As I told you before we started, that I can't wait to finish this book. So congratulations on all this, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
The book is called Son of a Trickster. It's published by Knopf. Its author, Eden Robinson, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.